96.1 and 1270.
It's snapped over the head of Peyton Manning. A flag is down and the ball's out of the back of the end zone. It's a safety to start this game as Manning wasn't running.
The experience of Peyton Manning and how well they executed the line of scrimmage. You talk about it each and every time you watch the Denver Broncos, and a miscommunication on the first play of the Super Bowl.
What a game. CBS Sports Radio, welcome back. Monday, once again, surviving the weekend, especially after last night. All the Jack and Cokes. All the paper cuts from tearing up tickets. It was riveting. 96.1, 1270. You can listen worldwide at renosportsradio.com. Also on the mobile app, Google Play, or the App Store. Go get it. Seahawks fan, the gloat line is open today, 775-823-1920. Please don't be like this one guy I encountered outside of Harrah's yesterday, because I'm doing the tour of the casinos yesterday, wearing my Vikings jacket, and of course someone has to comment on my Vikings jacket. Guy goes, "Hey, Vikings fan, good luck next year." And then Seahawks fan decides he's going to say, "Or how about next century?" To which I reply, "Well, this century just started." And he goes, "Yeah, you'll be waiting a long time." Way to take that high road, Seahawk fan. Way to take that high road. Doug Baldwin, high roading it out of New York and New Jersey, blasting Chris Carter, saying that, you remember how he had the chip on his shoulder from the NFC Championship game when Keyshawn and CeCe were talking about how pedestrian the Seahawks wide receivers were? Well, Doug Baldwin decided to mention that he had Googled Chris Carter, as he was suggested to do, and noticed that Chris Carter was 0-2 in conference championship appearances. Thanks for that. Love Super Bowl time, especially when the highlight packages come around for all the old games. That's great. So Seahawks fan, hey, you got to call me up at 823-1920. Let me know your favorite parts of the game. I'm sure you had some. For everyone else, though, Super Bowl 48 was a ripoff. And I particularly mean the weather, because they were always talking about the cold weather. It was fabulous yesterday. It was almost Seattle weather yesterday. If it would have rained, they were talking about a slight chance of rain, of light rain. That would have made it Seattle weather, which would have been probably one of the best omens for the Seahawks there could have possibly been. This actually bodes well for Seattle hosting a Super Bowl in their city, because it's a beautiful city. And with mild weather like you had in New York, Roger Goodell's going to want to try it again. He's going to push the cold weather Super Bowl envelope until he finally gets bit. And believe it or not, for all of us expecting the cold weather Super Bowl, for those who would make a bet on the over-under on the temperature during the game, the kickoff temperature, and what the lowest temperature would be, no one expected it was going to be as warm as it was throughout the entire night. Today, though, in New York City, it's funny because they're getting 6 to 10 inches of snow in New York City today. The entire Northeast is getting slammed today, which makes this story interesting about the NFL to review the train station fiasco in Secaucus, which is right there off the New Jersey Turnpike. The New York, New Jersey host committee underestimated by half the number of riders who would use the train to get to the game. And those 28,000 strain capacity and set a record for single-day traffic on the line. And this is why people drive in their cars with no one else in the car. This is why people refuse to carpool or take public transit, because of stuff like this. Because they underestimate. People figure if they're going to be hassled, they're going to be hassled in their own way. They're going to be hassled in privacy. They're not going to have to share anything with anyone. They're not going to have their personal space violated. They can belch in the car if they want. They can listen to whatever kind of music in the car they want, as loud as they want. They don't have to worry about people smelling bad. That's why they don't carpool. That's why they don't take public transit. Public transit's actually something this country really needs. But this sets it back like 20 years, I think. This is what NFL Executive Vice President Eric Grubman had to say at his news conference about the train station fiasco. When something is done the first time, you don't really know what's going to happen. No kidding. They underestimated by half the number of riders. It's funny because the NFL limited people's access to the stadium. You could only get to the stadium in certain ways. You remember the good old days when you could just drive to the stadium in the big old parking lot and carpool with your friends and you tailgate, you bring the grill? None of that. This is the Super Bowl. We can't have any fun. But the NFL tried. They sent out a whole bunch of charter buses, extra charter buses, 11,000 parking passes for cars, and they saw 12,000 fans arrive via pre-sold Fan Express shuttles. With the 1,100 bus permits, they said that the numbers added up to the 80,000 fans expected on Sunday. But not all train riders bought tickets ahead of time, and with no other way to get to the stadium, because, you know, you couldn't even take a cab into there. You couldn't walk to the stadium from somewhere. That's how bad they limited the access. And that's another reason that caused all these problems, is you limit the access, and then you bottleneck everyone. It's the worst kind of traffic jam you could possibly imagine. The last train left MetLife Stadium at 12:45 in the morning. Hopefully they were Seahawks fans staying around to savor the moments. So many moments for Seahawks fans. So many moments for everyone, really, when you think about it. Was this the worst Super Bowl ever? Once again, 823-1920. Want your thoughts on the Super Bowl. 823-1920. Twitter, at Reno Sports Radio. My Twitter is at Notch17. This game reminded me of the Super Bowl 37, the Tampa Bay-Oakland Super Bowl. The John Gruden double agent Super Bowl. Mostly because of the dominating defense on Tampa Bay's side. You had a veteran team with a high-powered offense on one side, the Raiders, with Rich Gannon, league MVP. You had the dominating turnover-filled game. You had a defensive player MVP. But you got to remember, Oakland scored first in that game. Oakland managed to get garbage time points in that game. Yesterday was one of the least competitive Super Bowls I can remember in a long time. And Seahawk gloat line is open now, 823-1920. Who's this?
It's Bob.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
I lost my shirt yesterday. I look like one of the Chili Peppers here in the studio.
I went the other way around.
Congratulations for you.
Yes, thank you very much. Anyway, my worst Super Bowl has to be Washington and Denver. That game was over by the first half.
This game was over after the first play. I played the clip of the first play in the show open. In my opinion, that is the play of the game.
Well, you know what's ironic?
I don't know.
That happened to New England, too.
A safety on the first play?
Well, it was in the first series. There was a bad snap to Brady in the end zone. And they were down 2-0 against Green Bay.
Yeah, but at least I came back and made a little bit of a game of it.
This
was one of those games where, kind of like the people at the Secaucus train station, they were waiting for the train that never showed up if you were waiting for the Broncos to come back and make it a game. I mean, look at some of these blowout Super Bowls. You had the Bears in Super Bowl 20, but New England scored first in that game. When Buffalo got blown out by Dallas, they scored first in that game. Denver, when they lost 55-10.
To Washington. That was the worst one.
To San Francisco. The Redskins game was a second quarter massacre.
Yeah.
The Redskins scored 35 in the second quarter.
Yeah.
But when they got blown out by Joe Montana and Jerry Rice, they made a field goal to cut it to 7-3 before they lost 55-10. The Chargers kind of kept it close. The Redskins, when they played the Raiders, that 38-9 game, they kind of kept it close. They didn't get a first down until 10 minutes to go in the second quarter, and they didn't score a point until it was 36-0.
Yep.
This was the least competitive Super Bowl possibly ever. Thanks for the call, buddy, by the way.
No problem.
All right.
Hockey's around now. Now it's hockey time.
That's right. Did you see the game yesterday, the Detroit-Washington game, 6-5 in OT?
No, I missed. I was listening on the radio.
It was an epic game. Well, thank you for listening to the radio.
Well, I have internet. I have Sirius radio.
Radio is radio, buddy.
It is.
Hey, we appreciate you listening to the radio, especially CBS Sports Radio. Thanks for calling.
All right.
All right. Not exactly gloating there, but 823-1920. Go gentle on me, Seahawk fan. I'm not backtracking on the Marbon Lynch comments, by the way. If you're going to present yourself as someone that looks stoned, I mean, sorry. Got a comment on you. He won a Super Bowl ring. Wasn't a factor in the game. obviously, like I said, the Broncos, they focused on Marshawn Lynch, didn't focus on anybody else. 823-1920, who's this? Hello?
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. Who's this?
I am a Broncos fan, so it's kind of a dreary morning this morning for those of us that are Broncos fans.
Did you bet on the Broncos minus 2.5?
I didn't bet. I bet dinner to a friend of mine that lives in Las Vegas. So when she comes up to visit, well, then she gets choice of dinner.
But it's a female friend, so you still win.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. But maybe I'll just tell myself to make myself feel better. I still would never see them.
Okay, so I think the first play was the pivotal play of the entire game. I'm going to tell everybody in a second why that is. But what do you think that was the key play of the game, or what do you think the key play of the game was as a Bronco fan? You still there? Hello? All right, phone kind of died, just like the Broncos did in the first quarter. But like I said, this was probably the least competitive game in the history of the Super Bowl. The play of the game was the safety. The very first play. And here's why. Because everyone was talking before the game about the Seahawks. Only team in the league. The entire 53-man roster. Nobody had been in the Super Bowl before. Nobody. The coaches, nobody. If Seattle had any nerves, any butterflies, being the emotional guys that they are, you can tell. Marshawn Lynch, Russell Wilson's even an emotional guy. When talking about his father, you have Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, Chancellor, the whole Legion of Boom. A lot of emotional guys on that team. There had to be some nerves going into that game, especially playing that high-powered offense. Sometimes you really, Troy Aikman even said it. This is a different ball game. You don't know what to expect sometimes. Peyton Manning at least knows what to expect. So first play, Peyton Manning's going up to the line to audible or do a dummy count or something. Ball sails right by his head. That safety was the moment where the Seahawks could loosen up and realize everything's going to be okay. That maybe the pressure wasn't on them. Maybe the pressure was on Denver. So they could play looser and more aggressive, which they did. If you're the veteran team with the overpowering offense, your job in this game is to impose your will on the younger opponent and fill their head with doubt. That's the way you beat them. First drive, if Denver would have driven down, gotten a touchdown like they did most of the season, then you kind of hear little uh-ohs from the 12th man on the Seahawks sideline. I'm sure they would still had confidence, but there would have been some doubt in there. You're facing an inexperienced opponent, but once they took that 2-0 lead, it's house money. You could tell they got more and more confident. Denver running these little short crossing routes. They were getting blown up. They weren't getting the pick plays. They weren't going downfield. It was like they were afraid somehow. I think the decision by Pete Carroll on fourth and less than a yard to kick the field goal when they were up 5-0, instead of trying to make it 12-0, they kicked the field goal and make it 8-0. A lot of people, including me, criticized that. I'm assuming other people are saying this, that you got to score points against this Denver team. You can't get into a field goal kicking contest with the Broncos. But here's the thing. Pete Carroll took the sure points. He didn't want to gamble. He didn't feel he needed to gamble. He didn't feel his team was inferior or desperate. He was confident enough in his defense that he just figured, I'm going to take the points. Make Denver show me something. He was just taking sure points. Confident coach, led to victory. Really big deal with them. The safety was just the pebble being rolled down the mountain. I mean, the Seahawks made a lot of plays, but in a lot of ways, Denver served it up on a T form. At the beginning, like I said, I mean, you have the bad snap, you have those short routes, afraid to go downfield, they're afraid to get physical. Offensive linemen were having troubles. Peyton Manning looking a little more statuesque than usual. They seemed kind of sloppy and lifeless. They seemed unprepared for this. They gave up in the third quarter. They were down 29-0, and they were at Seattle's 36, and they punted the ball on 4th-and-11. That was a white flag play. That was very disturbing. But like I was telling the caller on the phone. Everyone's expecting Denver to get back in this game. Mostly because of Denver's reputation. Mostly because of last year's Super Bowl, too. Basic mathematics also played a factor into it. Oh, it's possible they can get back in it. They're probably going to get back in it. Everyone's expecting it. It was like the bus that never showed up or the train that never showed up with the public transit nightmare with people trying to get out of the game. Oh, 5-0. Then it's 8-0. Then it's 15-0. Record-setting offense. They're just starting out slow. Then get back in the game. Then it got to 22-0 on this.
Manning gets hit. Ball up for grabs. Picked off by Smith. Malcolm Smith. All alone. No flags. Touchdown, Seattle.
Now, the first pick by Manning was just a bad throw. People were talking about that Seattle made a play that he was pressured, but he wasn't really that pressured. It was just an overthrow. Julius Thomas was open. It was just a terrible throw. 823-1920. Thank you for calling CBS Sports Radio. Who's this?
Pat, how you doing?
Pat, is this Seahawk fan Pat? Or is this the other Pat? Is this the Seahawk fan Pat or the other Pat?
No, not a Seahawks fan
at
all.
You're not the Seahawk fan Pat?
No.
Okay, so what can I do for you?
Well, one, I wanted to thank you for the tickets to Air Force versus UNR.
That was a great game.
Yeah,
Saturday.
UNR is very lazy, man. They just wow. Well, Air Force was, Air Force not as competitive because of the physical requirements of Air Force and stuff. But they played a whale of a game and took UNR right to the brink. But anyway, back to the big game, as they say, or the lackluster game.
You know who once trademarked the words "the big game"? Once upon a time.
I wished. Yeah,
no, someone actually did once upon a time.
Yeah.
The XFL.
The XFL.
Called their championship game the big game at the end. So they trademarked the words "the big game" that all these people use in commercials when they can't say the word Super Bowl for
but
some reason.
But they're defunct, so it doesn't make any difference.
So tell me, what were your quick thoughts from the game?
The Broncos were ill-prepared, ill-coached, and quarterbacked by a guy who probably could have been outplayed by John Elway at this point.
It's possible.
Oh, man. Peyton, everybody's so hot on Peyton all the time, but to me, he overthinks it. Always the changes at the line and all this stuff. He gets into, he's like Favre. Favre used to throw a lot of picks, ill conceived picks, but I mean, like that one he threw where he's in the middle of everybody and he just closed his eyes and flung the ball. It was just
Peyton did this?
Terrible. Yeah. He was surrounded. He was getting hammered instead of pulling the ball down.
Was that the Thomas throw or is that the one that was returned for the pick six?
I think that was the pick six where it just fluttered up in the air and
yeah,
boom.
His arm got hit on that play.
Yeah, he was in it. He was in it, but he just closed his eyes and at that point, you eat the ball. You don't still try to throw it when they're that close.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, so my question is, what does Denver do now? They spent $100 million on him, and he's played 2 years out of, a five-year contract or a four-year contract?
I think it was a four-year contract.
Yeah, so what do they do now? I mean, he looked old to me. He looked like an old man out there today.
Both teams are really at a crossroads. Pat, I appreciate the call. In the next segment, I'm going to go into more detail about the future.
Okay,
yeah, just keep listening after the break. I'm going to come back, and I'm going to talk about the forks in the road for both these teams. So
okay,
I appreciate you listening to CBS Sports Radio.
Bye.
All right, yeah, next segment, I'm going to talk about the future of both these teams, and they're on different escalators right now. But let's look at Peyton Manning real quick. This didn't hurt his legacy as much as it just put some varnish on it that you're going to have to shine off at some point. He's never really been a big game quarterback. That is the knock on him. It is a deserved knock. He set a record for the most postseason losses by a quarterback in NFL history. That was his 12th playoff loss in the Super Bowl. His one Super Bowl win, they named him MVP. But he had pedestrian stats in that game. They were decent. But Dominic Rhodes rushed for over 100 yards, and they got a bunch of turnovers thanks to Rex Grossman. Big return touchdown by them. And by the way, now teams that return a touchdown, an interception for a touchdown, are now 12-0 lifetime in the Super Bowl, by the way. So he's got the reputation as being anti-clutch. Thank God he has that one ring, because there's a list of guys like the Marinos and the John Elways and the Tarkentons, guys that are great, but then you get to a certain point and then the velvet rope is there and they're not going to let you in. Peyton Manning has that one ring. This wasn't even a close loss. This was, like I said, probably the least competitive Super Bowl ever. By the way, I had an excellent tweet that I was going to send out right after the second half kickoff, but it got ruined. I'm going to read it to you real quick since I deleted it. This is what I was going to tweet. After the second half kickoff in SB 47, the margin was 22 points. Game came down to the end, still hope for SB 48. Then, since I was waiting until after the second half kickoff to post it, this happened.
They just pop it up. Good kick by Prater on a hop. It's Harvin, but now he takes off. And Percy Harvin gets free. Percy Harvin inside the 30. He's going to go. Touchdown, Seattle. They pop it up because they don't want Percy Harvin to return this ball. And it's just terrible play by the special teams of the Denver Broncos in coverage. They had a number of guys with an opportunity to make a play on Percy Harvin before he got going. And once he did, there's nobody on this field. 21 other guys, nobody can run like Percy Harvin.
Well, that ruined the game, 29-0. Then you kind of realized that it's kind of over. By the way, one of the prop bets I did nail was the under on the Omaha count, which was 27.5. I don't think he said Omaha the entire game. I think that was a factor, because I think he was trying to change it up a little too much for the Seahawks, because they might have been expecting the Omaha hard count, like a Drew San Diego offside a half dozen times in the divisional round. Hell hath no fury like an Omaha scorned. I think that's really the way to put it. That might have been a factor in the bad snap, actually, because the center, Manny Ramirez, said that we didn't know what the snap count was on the opening play. Maybe Peyton was trying to outsmart himself instead of just running their own race. Like the Seahawks were talking about during the game, that at some point they weren't even worried about what the Broncos were doing. They're just going to run their own race. They're going to play their own game, and whatever happened, happened. Peyton Manning had this to say, by the way, after the game. This kind of bothered me.
It's not embarrassing at all. I would never use that word. There's a lot of professional football players in that room, in the locker room, that put a lot of hard work and effort into being here, into playing in that game. And the word embarrassing is an insulting word, to tell you the truth.
He seemed kind of rattled in that interview. Normally the composed, interview-friendly Peyton Manning, wasn't that guy in that interview. You could tell he wasn't focused, even in the interview. Kind of bothered by the fact he said he wasn't embarrassed, that that's an insulting term. If you weren't embarrassed by that display in front of a worldwide audience, when are you ever going to be embarrassed about anything? If you are record set, if you've achieved such a level and you fall so far, so quickly, so ingloriously, that was a terrible game. I don't know what it is about athletes. There's no middle ground. We get this.
It's not embarrassing at all. I would never use that word. There's a lot of professional football players in that room, in the locker room, that put a lot of hard work and effort into being here, into playing in that game. And the word embarrassing is an insulting word, to tell you the truth.
So we have someone that doesn't feel embarrassed, someone that's really not showing that much emotion, to be honest with you. He seemed pretty emotionless talking about that. If you can't even feel embarrassed about that, I'm sorry, you're an emotionless person. We either have that or we have this.
Don't you ever talk about me!
I mean, there's no middle ground anywhere. What are we going to do? The Seahawks played with emotion. The Broncos, it was kind of like they were expecting to win, almost. You have respect for your opponent because you're supposed to. But still, I'm really bothered by that comment. We're going to talk in just minutes. I'm going to take a quick break here. Running a little bit late. Got to take a break. We're going to talk about the future of the Broncos. More importantly, for Seahawks fan, Still, the gloat line is open, 823-1920. No gloaters yet, but we're going to talk about the future of the Seahawks. We're going to also talk about comparisons that were made on ESPN to the potential dynasty that the Seahawks could be. And they made some comparisons. I don't agree with the comparisons. I'm going to make my own accurate comparison. That's all coming up here in minutes. It's CBS Sports Radio.
Northern Nevada's new home for sports, 96.1 and 1270. CBS Sports
Radio. All right, welcome back, Sports Buffet Notch. Oh, I love Mondays. I can't survive these weekends much longer. 96.1, 1270. Those are the frequencies. Worldwide, RenoSportsRadio.com. 823-1920. Bob W.
Hey, Notch, great job.
Thank you.
Notch, and that was a solid point on the safety. It got the Seahawks to relax, but I feel the Harvin touchdown, the return.
The Harvin made it past the point of no return to where everyone that was deluding themselves into thinking the Broncos were going to come back.
Right. I mean,
that was the play that said, all right, that's it.
Yeah, don't get excited. Hadn't the Broncos just scored?
No, that was the second half kickoff.
Oh, okay.
It made it 29-0.
I mean, you know, didn't they put it in the second quarter, though, the Broncos?
Their first touchdown came when they were losing 36-0.
Oh, God. Look at me. And I watched the game totally sober, too. But anyway.
That makes one of us, Bob.
The Harvin play was, I mean, did he make that look easy almost? It was weird. I mean, it was like these guys had never covered a kickoff, and Seattle dominated four places in the game, offense, defense, special teams, and coaching. It was like John Fox had never coached a football team before. It was weird.
Troy Aikman actually noted on the Harvin kick return that Denver was subpar at kick coverage.
God, I mean, he was so...
Which is weird because they scored so much, you'd think they'd be good. They'd have enough practice covering kickoffs.
Yeah, he was just running free, and it was a great play, and I think, you know, like you said, that said you aren't coming back against us.
Well, no. Once it got to 29-0.
And Wilson is such a cool customer. If anybody had nerves, it was Denver. It just seemed very strange.
Russell Wilson should have been MVP, I think.
Yeah, he should have been.
If Peyton Manning could get MVP for his Super Bowl win with decent stats, he had one TD, one pick in that game. Russell Wilson was 18 of 25 for 206 with two TDs, no turnovers. And
no picks,
very
no
little, no turnovers of any kind by Seattle. He played a very clean game. He's not a game manager. He
they say, you know, Notch, I'm so tired of hearing that about a system quarterback, a game manager. It is kind of a put down. Like all the guy has to do is hand off.
It's about getting a compliment. It's a don't make mistakes thing. They don't want They don't want you to go out and excel. They just want you to run the system and just not bleep it up.
And, you know, that's what Trent Dilfer was the year the Ravens won. Really, he was like a game manager, and I think he acknowledges that. Just don't make any mistakes, and we're going to keep it close, and we can win it.
Trent Dilfer still made mistakes because they had Tony Banks starting the year for Baltimore. And when he screwed up, then they brought Dilfer in.
Right,
that's
right.
That's how messed up the Ravens were when they won in 2000. Bob, I appreciate the call. Thanks.
Okay, Notch. Thanks a lot.
The point about Russell Wilson was excellent because when he left the pocket, he didn't leave the pocket because the Broncos forced him out of the pocket. Not really. He's more comfortable outside the pocket, so he was just taking advantage of his comfort zone, I think, in more ways than just the Broncos. They had very little pass rush, very little pressure. Receivers are open down the field, especially on that Baldwin play early, which was a backbreaker. There's so many backbreakers. Like I said before, the Seahawks, they made plays. The Broncos put a lot of things on a tee, but you got to credit the Seahawks. They made plays. Malcolm Smith, the MVP, he had the pick six, nine tackles. He also recovered the fumble from Demaryius Thomas. Where do the Broncos go from here? I compared the game earlier to the Tampa Bay-Oakland game. In a lot of ways, this Denver team is similar to the Oakland Raider team. They got blasted by Tampa Bay. You had a lot of veteran players. They had a really good offense. You had aging receivers, but they were great receivers. Jerry Rice and Tim Brown. Rich Gannon was MVP of the league. It's also kind of like Miami when they lost Super Bowl 19. Dan Marino, direct parallel. He set the records that year for passing yards in a season and passing touchdowns. And the Raiders and the Dolphins, since those two losses, neither of them have appeared in a Super Bowl ever again. Am I saying that the Broncos are going down that same path? It's quite possible they're going down that same path. How much of John Elway do we know as a personnel man? What did he do for quarterback? He went out and he got a legendary veteran quarterback. They have Brock Osweiler as their backup. He's like the Jim Sorgi of the Broncos. You know, the Jim Sorgi with the Colts, never played. You don't know what you have at quarterback. Peyton Manning has a very short shelf life left. They were speculating he was going to retire. You gotta wonder how much their heart is still in this, especially after a performance like the Broncos had. Peyton Manning saying that he wasn't embarrassed by it. He should be embarrassed by it. Anyone that rooted for the Broncos, anyone that bet on the Broncos, should be embarrassed by it. I was embarrassed by it, and I'm not even a Bronco fan. I was embarrassed as a football fan to have to watch that game. So the Broncos can't just assume they're going to stay on top of the AFC West, because John Fox, of all people, should know how quickly the league can catch up to you. He inherited a 1-15 Carolina team and had them in the Super Bowl within 2 years. So John Fox should know. You got to draft smart if you're Denver at this point. They're set at a lot of positions. They need defense. They need depth on defense. Their cornerbacks are aging. They have the 31st pick. They're probably going to go defense with their pick. They've got running backs. Sean Moreno's doing pretty good. You don't need to spend your first-round pick on a running back if you're that Broncos team. I just see them slumping a little bit. I don't know how far. It's not like what I talked about with Tom Brady after they lost to Denver in the AFC Championship game. I think they're on a fast track downhill. The Belichick Brady that we're used to seeing, that's going to be gone. I think this was the last time we saw them. The Broncos, I'm not sure. I'm not totally sure. But they got to watch out. They're really going to have to watch out. Seahawks are different, though, because the future is bright. Some people are exaggerating how bright exactly, which is bothersome. Got to remember something. When we're digesting all this talk about legacies and dynasties, the Seahawks, one of the youngest Super Bowl champions ever, 26 years and 4 months. Chris Berman launched into something of a diatribe last night on ESPN. I'll get to that in a second. 823-1920. Thanks for calling CBS Sports Radio. Who's this?
Hey, what's up, Notch? This is Jackson. How you doing today?
Jackson, what's up, buddy?
Hey, man, the only thing more disappointing than a dollar of a game yesterday was watching Lawrence Fishburne sell out the Matrix franchise to sell Cheetos. How disturbing is that?
Was that one of the commercials?
Yeah. That was Lawrence Fishburne doing the Matrix commercial to try to sell Kia. I was just thoroughly disappointed.
Well, I must have missed that one.
If you have any respect for the Matrix movies, then I would say don't ever watch it, because it's just awful.
I'm actually going to give a wrap-up here on the commercials coming up here in a little bit, but I appreciate that.
I got a couple other thoughts for you, if you got a minute. I think you're spot
absolutely.
On with your analysis of that being the Tampa Bay and Raiders.
It really started reminding me of that game in the middle of the second quarter.
Yeah, no doubt. That was, I don't know, man. I think that the window has slammed shut for Denver at this point.
You think the window's shut?
I think it's completely shut for them. Maybe if Manziel drops to the bottom of the first round, maybe they can get a quarterback. I don't think he will. But, I mean, look, Peyton Manning's arm strength is, we got to talk about it. It's an issue. He cannot make the throws. He made the season on a bunch of slants and screens where he had great receivers who did all the work.
Timing routes.
Yeah. And
a lot of timing routes.
What it seemed like to me is, do you remember a couple years ago, Kurt Warner almost killed Anquan Boldin up over the middle?
I remember that throw. It was the hit that almost killed him. The throw was terrible,
though. Well, if the throw would have been in a better place, he wouldn't have had to.
But if the throw were in a better place, he might not have completed it either.
What I think about, though, is when I was watching that game last night, was that he's going to get one of his receivers killed. I mean, it seemed like nothing had any zip coming off his arm. And I mean, he put up great numbers this year, but how much of that is due to him, being a good, I hate to say it, but game manager and making smart plays and checkdowns, and how much of that was as having great receivers, talented young receivers who are fast when they get the ball in space can do something with it. I don't see how Peyton Manning is going to be a viable quarterback any longer. I don't see it.
He's still going to get good regular season stats.
Regular season stats. So what? I mean, it doesn't matter at all. I guarantee you, he'd give it all up and. Sit out injured all year, and they got to play in the Super Bowl and won it. I bet you could take it. So, I mean, I don't. I was frustrated by it because it was just such a dog of a game. I was really looking forward to it. I think everyone in the world thought it was going to be a three-point game, you know, evenly matched teams, and it was just, I don't know, and it was disturbing. And I don't know. There's so many quarterbacks out there now who can make all the throws, and, you know, like luck transcends the position of quarterback, and you got all these young, you know, Kaepernicks, and you got all these great arms all over the league. I mean, I don't know. I would probably right now put Peyton Manning outside the top 15 quarterbacks.
That's – I don't know if I'd go that far.
Because I value arm strength at the quarterback position more than I do being smart or good check downs or you know, put your guys in – I think in today's NFL, you have to have a guy who can stretch the field, and I just don't think they can do it anymore, man. I really don't.
So you have Joe Flacco ranked higher?
Yes.
They have the same number of Super Bowls.
Here's how bad I think I feel. I take Cutler over Manning at this point.
Well, that's
Cutler, Rivers.
He's not a big game quarterback either, but at least Peyton Manning's been to three Super Bowls. Jay Cutler, he hasn't even been to one yet, so I don't know about that comparison. At what point during the game? One final question before I let you go, Jackson. Thanks for the call, by the way. But at what point during the game did you stop going, Denver can come back from this?
I think after the safety, I pretty much. Because you can see the writing on the wall. I mean,
I said that was the pivotal play of the game, that it loosened the Seahawks up, and they were allowed to play more aggressively and more freely.
Not that I thought it was over at that point, but I really thought the writing was on the wall. Like, oh, man, something's not right. When Manning can't even take the first snap in the Super Bowl, it's not going to be a good day for that team. It's just, it can't. So, anyway, hey, thanks a lot, Nacho. Have a good day, buddy.
Hey, you bet. You too, Jackson. Thanks for calling. 823-1920, by the way, is the phone number here. Seahawks, they got compared to a lot of dynasty championship teams that were also really young. There's one fundamental problem with what Chris Berman did. He compared them to the 74 Steelers, who went on to win four Super Bowls in 5 years. He compared them to the 71 Dolphins. These are similar teams in cumulative age, average age of player. 71 Dolphins, they lost that Super Bowl, but then they won the next two. They went undefeated the following season. 81 Niners, 85 Bears. Chris Berman forgot about the word salary cap. None of those four teams had to deal with the salary cap. If I'm a Seahawks fan, I don't want to be compared to any of those four teams because it's a different age now with the salary cap. It's not relevant. The 81 Niners, by the way, they took 2 years off from the Super Bowl before they went back, and then they won, and then they drafted Jerry Rice, and they waited three more years before they played in their third Super Bowl. So if I'm a Seahawks fan, I don't know if I want to wait 7 years to play in three Super Bowls. If you think you can play in multiple ones in a row right now, why would you want to wait 7 years to play in your third when you can do it in 3 or 4 years? 85 Bears, of course, the salary cap issues, but also they were a dominant team, but that was the only Super Bowl they ever played in. Do you want to be like the Tampa Bay Bucks? Do you want to be like the Baltimore Ravens or the 85 Bears where you have that one just blaze of glory, and then who knows what happens? You may never go back. Is that what you want? The other two teams I just mentioned, the Ravens and the Bucks, those are salary cap teams with dominant defenses. They had defensive players winning the MVP. But the difference between the Seahawks of this year and those two teams, the 2000 Ravens and the 2002 Bucks, quarterback. It's still a quarterback-driven league. You're looking at Trent Dilfer and Brad Johnson as the starting quarterbacks for those two teams. Russell Wilson is in his second year. If you're going to compare this Seahawks team to a current salary cap era team, here's the one you should hit your wagon to, Seahawk fan. The 2001 Patriots. Seattle wasn't a double-digit underdog in that game like New England was. But the Patriots, they beat the greatest show on turf. It was a close game. It wasn't a blowout. But it was still one of the greatest Super Bowls ever. They didn't win on the last play of the game. But you look at the coaches. You got Belichick and Kerry. You got a couple of coaches. They've failed before at the NFL level. They've learned their lessons. They're using their failures to make the most of what they have now. You've got Russell Wilson and what was then a young Tom Brady. Quarterbacks that you can build your franchise around for years and years. That's something to look forward to. You have depth. Both these teams are really deep. I know the Patriots, you had to use Troy Brown at cornerback because they were so injury depleted in the secondary. But generally speaking, both the teams, pretty deep. And with a lot of guys, unheralded players, guys that were undrafted or they were drafted in what we now know as the second and third days of the draft, the third through seventh rounds. And because of that, you got to know you have front offices that are excellent talent evaluators. Fabulous talent evaluators. Ownership that's dedicated to winning and providing a family atmosphere. If you're the Seahawks, you really have to focus on being like the 2001 New England Patriots. Don't think about teams from the 70s. It's a totally different era. I've got the Seahawks 2014 salaries here. The cap hits. Some of these guys are going to have to go to make room for some of the guys that have to stay. Let's look at the guys that have to stay. Malcolm Smith. He's probably going to go. The reason is, you look at Dexter Jackson, who was the MVP for the Bucs. He got offered this contract he couldn't refuse. Can't remember which team it was. I think it was Detroit. But Malcolm Smith, $645,000 next year. He, in the last two games, he had the interception that took them to the Super Bowl, the one for against the 49ers. After Sherman tipped the ball, Smith was the guy that caught the ball. Then he had the pick six, Super Bowl MVP. If the Seahawks aren't going to pay him, somebody is. Russell Wilson, he's going to be an $80, $90 million player. He's making $662,000 next year. Richard Sherman next year is making less than $1.4 million. Bruce Irvin's making less than $1.3 million. Then you've got the guys like Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor. They're making under $5 million a year. Marshawn Lynch is making $5 million. There's some guys that are going to have to be cut. Sidney Rice is going to have to get cut. He's his cap number next year, his cap hits almost $10 million. Russell Okun, if they can find an offensive lineman in the draft, they may let him go. His cap number is 11.2. Chris Clemens, 9.7 mil. Red Bryant, 8.5 mil. Zach Miller, 7 mil. Talent evaluators like John Schneider for the Seahawks got to find replacements for some of these guys. It's going to affect your depth down the road. You got about a year or two left with some of these rookie contracts. Some of your best players, you're going to have to spend a lot of money on some of these really good players. So the key is going to be how much of a hometown discount they're going to take and how well you can keep drafting. Because you're not going to sneak up on people anymore. So that's very key for the Seahawks. Got to take a quick break, but a little more Super Bowl coming up. Halftime show, rundown, some of the ads, plus the Wolfpack, they play this weekend too. It's coming up next at CBS Sports Radio.
96.1 and 1270.
You hear that? That's the sound of money. Remember what I said on Thursday, last Thursday on CBS Sports Radio 96.1 and 1270? The lock of the Super Bowl was Bruno Mars performing Locked Out of Heaven first in the halftime show. Boom! At least I got one bet right. Okay, it's not true. I also got Marshawn Lynch with the under the rushing yards, 87 rushing yards. I got that right. You only had 35 rushing yards. So at least I got two things right. At least I got the over right. I was a little off on the Broncos minus 2.5. Bruno Mars looked like the Super Bowl MVP last night. Did really well. The Chili Peppers, they came out with their man nipples. They looked like a bunch of shirtless hobos. Not a fan of the Chili Peppers' performance, but Bruno Mars looked really good. Twitter was entertaining also about the Super Bowl halftime show because there was some racial divide between the Bruno Mars fans and the Red Hot Chili Peppers fans. The Chili Peppers fans weren't exactly keen on Bruno Mars. Bruno Mars fans really didn't care that much about the Chili Peppers. But the Chili Peppers fans seemed to resent the existence of Bruno Mars. Might have been a little racial. There was a lot of that. Especially the commercials. The mixed family was back in the Cheerios ad. It's a nice ad. It's a nice family. People are people. Also, people were losing their mind about the Coca-Cola ad where America the Beautiful was being sung in different languages. There were actually a few good Super Bowl ads. My favorite was the Oikos ad. John Stamos, the woman's licking the yogurt off of his mouth, and then he decides, oh, I spilled a little bit on my lap. Filthy Pervert, John Stamos. Full House guys showed up. That was awesome. Tim Tebow was in one.
Tim Tebow here. Everyone thinks I want a contract, but without one, I've done so much this year.
Nervous father's the mic. White 20 motion.
Is that Tim Tebow?
Why did he bring
That's him as a surgeon.
Without a contract?
There he is.
I've tackled the unknown. Worked on my delivery.
I mean, talk about illegal use of the hands, right?
That's him as a stand-up comedian. He's playing chess.
Could I do this?
Gotcha.
All right, that's enough, Tim Tebow.
If I had a contract, I couldn't do my own stunts. Or save these puppies.
Yeah, he saved puppies in the ad. It's amazing. They actually had the Budweiser ad with the puppies, which was really cool. Also, Radio Shack went back to the 80s. I like this one.
What?
The 80s called. They want their store back.
A lot of 80s cameos in this one. Hard to tell on the radio, but it was really good. The Seinfeld one was pretty good with Jerry and George in the coffee shop, but I can't remember who it was for. And the whole point of advertising is to get your name brand out there. So whoever the ad was for, they did a terrible job of getting their brand out there. Because all I can think about is Seinfeld, watching Seinfeld reruns. The SodaStream ad, I only like that because of Scarlett Joe. Other than that, it was just, eh. The Bud Light ads were terrible. The Ron Burgundy hype that was going on about whatever is coming, 2214. And the ads are pretty lame. The Ford one with Rob Riggle and then James Franco pretending to be Rob Riggle. I know it was trying to be funny, and the ad's got to be really funny for me to enjoy it, but that one was just goofy. Beats Music had Ellen in one of them. Otherwise, it was just kind of plain. The only thing I really remember from that ad is they're trying to charge you $14.99 for some service that you can use on multiple cell phones or something. Apparently, people that don't know how to properly download MP3s can do this. Esurance, they did this one right after the game so they could save money on the ad. They made a big point about that. Jim from The Office was there. But then they ruined it. I liked it until they decided to make everybody hashtag sheep by making you tweet something with a special hashtag to win $1 million. I'm not being a hashtag sheep. I do send out tweets sometimes with a hashtag and it says hashtag sheep afterwards, which is interesting. Super Bowl fans in Sherman, Texas, Glendive, Montana, and Ardmore, Oklahoma got a special treat courtesy of Will Ferrell. He's back in one of those obscure old Milwaukee ads. He's on a city bus making out with an elderly Asian woman for about 35 seconds in the ad. And the people in front of him has a six-pack of old Milwaukee in their grocery bag. It's just a terrible ad. About 3 minutes ago, a little bit of housekeeping. Got to tell you about the Wolfpack. Great game on Saturday. Another overtime game. 69-56 over Air Force. They cover the 10, miraculously. You probably thought they weren't since the game went to overtime, since they blew a big first-half lead in the second half. The game still went under the 141, though. 69-56 came in at 125. Most of their games have been under this year. They had a big lead at the half. Like I said, Deontay Burton, rough shooting night. Rough shooting day, actually. It was an afternoon game. But he brought some to the table since he couldn't make shots. That's what good players do. Had 7 assists, only 1 turnover. They played great defense. The Falcons only shot 29%. Jerry Evans led the team 17-10, double-double for him. A.J. West, 12 boards, but he struggled at the foul line. 4 of 11 from the charity stripe. They got to work on that. It's coaching. 7-2 in the Mountain West. They're doing really good. They got another winnable game on Wednesday. Their next game is at Utah State. Aggies are 2-7 in conference, 12-9 overall. Like I said, that's a winnable game. Good job, Wolfpack. Watched a really good NHL game before the Super Bowl on NBC. Red Wings, Canucks, 6-5 in overtime. Great game. There was a bunch of soccer on, too. I couldn't watch all the Super Bowl halftime stuff. If you're looking for something to bet on NHL tonight, got Canucks at Detroit. Go the over, 5 total goals. Ottawa at Pittsburgh, over 5.5. And Chicago is at L.A. to play the Kings. Take the Blackhawks on the money line, -110. And like I said before, with the L.A. Kings, they can't score goals right now. So ride that under until they prove otherwise. They gave me a scare over the weekend because Pittsburgh went into Staples Center. And it was 3-1 in the first period, Pittsburgh. Game ended 4-1, so it was a push. But right now with the Kings, they're only scoring one or two goals. So you can get a 3-1, 3-2, 4-1 scenario in those games. Once again, Blackhawks money line and under 5 total goals in LA. NBA, didn't watch any basketball this weekend, but got a couple good games. Sacramento's at home against Chicago tonight. They're a dog, 1.5-point underdogs against the Bulls. Take them. The over-under's 191.5. If you feel like betting on that, bet the over. Couple of unders. Eastern Conference unders, y'all. Detroit and Miami. Don't even think about betting the Heat as a double-digit favorite, unless you like losing money. Just give me the money instead. But do take the under 207.5. Pistons at Heat. Don't touch the Heat with a 10-foot pole. Philly at Brooklyn. Brooklyn, double-digit favorite. Don't touch down with a 10-foot pole. Go under 208 on that. Special thanks to all my callers today. Thanks to the Seahawks fans for not calling in and gloating. I'm Notch, Sports Buffet. I'm out of here. Jim Rome is in next. Have a great one. Smell you later. CBS Sports Radio. Thanks for listening.
From the Reno Media Group,
KBZZ Sparks Reno,
96.1 and 1270, Northern Nevada's home of the San Francisco 49ers, plus Tiki Barber, Boomer Esiason, Jim Rome, Panama, and more. CBS.